It was night putting. Just putting at night.
Hello and welcome to the Night Putting Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Sabat, joined by my co-host, Jason Gillis. Gilly, how we doing today?
I'm doing great. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, too. I kind of was forgetting what you looked like there. Just a scant, 70-some days since our last podcast. Only a couple of things have happened since then, right?
Yeah. Always leave them wanting more.
They've been clamoring for the podcast that no one was clamoring for.
It wasn't by design. We've had several vacations. We recorded a podcast that we might talk about, we may not talk about, that didn't go as well as one would hope.
The famous lost episodes where Kyle drank half a bottle of Basil Hayden and could barely pronounce his own name.
I guess we are going to get into it. Yeah, I was setting up the podcast stuff, and we had our guys Mitch, Dr. Mitch, and Dr. Nick from Northern Edge Cairo, chiropractors, and
shout out to the docs.
They brought over that bottle, and I had a little one finger nip, and I was setting up the podcast stuff, and then about 20 minutes later, the bottle was on the podcast table, and it was like three quarters gone, and then we took four takes, and I told a story twice, and that's we're putting that out as our special 100th episode.
Amateur podcasting at its finest.
My thoughts were like, is this what we want to present on our second episode?
Let's let people kind of like us before they make us absolutely seem like we're
and if you're into
idiots and alcoholics.
Yeah, if you're into if you're into like the, what was it, 2012 Rory back nine at the Masters where you like four putted from 10 feet. If you like that sort of thing, we will put out that podcast for you because it's very similar.
Oh, the Rory four putting from 10 feet. Or who was the,
The Charles Schwartzel.
There you go.
Yeah. He birdied the last four, and it is Masters season.
It is Masters
the
season.
Tradition unlike any other.
Oh God, I can't wait. This whole sports season is like my favorite time of the year.
It's sans football?
March Madness rolling into the Masters. It's quite literally my favorite thing. I've got my Masters, like my two-piece thing that like this ping. It's got all the Masters logos on it. I'll wear it for like a whole weekend and just not shower, and my wife will be so disappointed.
I thought you were talking about the painter's outfit they make the caddies wear.
Oh, God, I should get one of those. How do you find? We need to figure that out.
eBay.
Yeah,
That'll be our official podcast uniform.
All right, I'm writing that down. eBay.
Yeah, but it's been a minute, and it's challenging. I'm getting a little busier as well, and you've always been busy. So I think we have a little system in place so that I think that we're able to put these out fairly regularly. And I mean, we still had fun doing them. I'm not saying that second episode wasn't fun. It was extremely fun.
It was a riot.
We forgot to ask the chiropractors what their experience was golfing. The whole theme of this podcast is to figure out, why Minnesota.
Yeah.
You know, people are so obsessive.
Yeah, and then you guys got into the weeds on medical stuff, and I was drunk and left the room because I was confused by life, which doesn't take a whole lot these days.
I actually have a clip from when we were talking about medical stuff. That was your microphone.
That was just a loop. Yeah. I guess.
So what have you been up to? This is an organic conversation. I really don't know much of what you've been up to because would you say it's been 70-something days?
Oh, God, I think so. The first one we put out was late January, early February, something like that. So
time's a flat circle at this point.
Time's a flat circle. I feel like I can taste color after you said that. So couple of vacations. Courtney and I had our 10-year anniversary. She's summarily totaled a vehicle since then.
Really? I didn't get into that. You didn't?
Huh. Yeah, that was Tuesday. That was fun.
What happened there?
Well, I mean, It depends on, you know, it depends on, I mean, I wasn't there, and there were no witnesses in the one car crash, but who knows?
Okay.
It was snowing. It was that day where we had, like, this. The weather's been so crazy. It's been snowing, like, foot at a time out here, and then all of a sudden, it's, like, 70 degrees today, and every golf course in Minnesota is basically, like, today is their opening day. Like, Edinburgh, which is my home course, they're opening, and usually they're one of the last public courses to open up. So that means they feel really confident about where everything's going weather-wise. So
yeah, it's on.
Yeah,
that's what you're saying.
Game on, Minnesota. Let's go.
And I don't think it's a coincidence that I've received, like, a huge volume of calls.
Is that one of them right there?
No, that's Allstate Insurance. you never would guess. It's a sales call. You get many of them?
My phone never stops ringing.
Yeah, I have two phone numbers. I get it times two because I have my 612 number that streams.
I'm going to unlist everything.
Anyway, what was I talking about? Yeah, I've seen a spike in memberships. People are getting ready for the summer. Everyone's excited.
Yeah.
Happy to have them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's exciting. You know,
but back to Courtney's car crash.
Yeah.
One of those mysteries. One of those mysteries.
Yeah.
Best left unsolved.
Yeah. You know, she was coming around a corner and kind of sideswiped the wall. And it's always really fun when you get, like, the inaudible, crying, gasping phone call, and you're like, you're trying to figure out what in God's name is going on, because you can't disseminate any of the information.
Right.
But all's well. She was the only one in the car. She didn't hit anybody else. She's just a little sore, a little shaken up. The Lincoln is, I think we're gonna say goodbye to that old gal. She. It's all done. I told my wife, I said, if you really wanted a new car, we could have figured out a better way than you risking your life. But
yeah,
you know,
it's a long way to go for a new set of wheels.
Yeah, exactly. But no, she and you know, it's referencing the doctors here for the second time. She was in there yesterday getting checked out because, you know, she got some soreness and bumps and bruises when you spin out at 50 some miles an hour. Tends to take a little bit of a toll on a body.
It sounds terrifying, spinning out in the snow, because, you know, being from California, I don't have a ton of experience driving in the snow. So I did take the Tesla through the front yard one day and into the garage, and I did the full Chevy Chase like I meant to do that. Like, that was fun, kids. We're here.
I think everybody's had that experience driving in the snow in Minnesota. I had it once. I would have been, I want to say, about 20 years old, driving back from Winona. Which Winona's southwest or southeast corner of the state. It's where I went to college.
Okay.
It's like 2.5 hours away. I'm trying to give Gilly a little bit of directional here.
I know Maple Grove and Plymouth.
Gotta widen that net.
And Rogers.
Rogers.
We tried to figure out where Rogers is from. I found out it is from Mr. Rogers. That's where he started his first neighborhood.
It's 100% not correct, because I'm actually from Rogers.
I got some bad intel.
Yes, you got some horrible intel. I grew up in Rogers.
Okay.
Good God. Oh, I was driving back from Winona once, and I'm going up 61, and I'm in the right lane, and I'm going around just a gentle bend, and all of a sudden my ass end starts to kick out at like 60 miles an hour, and I did 2.5 spins and ended up, I'm in the right lane, and I ended up in the left shoulder facing traffic. So that was interesting.
I feel like that's a fair metaphor for your daily life.
2.5 with spins the five facing kids, traffic.
Charlie, just
yeah.
Oh, don't God. Know where you're.
God. Oh, my God. Speaking of facing traffic, so when I got back, I was in Mexico, and I had a huge project I was working on, and I had I mean, I spent like 60 hours on this thing while I was in Mexico, which made for an awesome trip for my wife. I came home that Friday, and I immediately, we got to the house at 9:30, and I was over to my customers by like 10:15 that night, trying to put stuff together, put stuff in a loading truck to get it out. I mean, this thing was nuts. But I'm driving home on 169. It's about 1:30 in the morning. And I mean, it's, you know, from where we're at right now, it's all of about 3 miles away. I'm in the left lane. I'm driving. There's a navigator next to me. I got my pickup with, you know, with all the stuff that we're going to deliver the next day. And I look and I'm like, huh, that looks like headlights. doesn't seem right. Didn't think too much of it. Thought maybe, you know, their other lane, something like that. And I kind of looked down to grab something. I look back up. I'm like, oh, those are getting bigger. Oh, fuck. That guy's in my lane. So I stomp on the gas. Whomp! I go flying past this the navigator that's on my right. And I missed a head-on 60-mile-an-hour crash by less than a second.
Yeah.
At like 1:30 in the morning. As I just got back from my vacation.
And the guy drove by and he's like, you lost. Yeah. You didn't know, but you were in a game of chicken.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I lost that
game. So you were in a two-lane highway and he was going on the wrong side of the road?
Yeah. So like we're on 169.
Oh, 169. He was going...
He was going south in the northbound lane on 169. I looked back and luckily there wasn't anybody like real close behind me, but yeah. I looked at my rear view as I was driving by and you just saw pins scattering. I mean, it was nuts.
And then you said this.
Watch it, ass blood.
It's a perfect.
Watch it, ass blood.
Yeah. That's. I said that immediately after I shit my pants.
Oh boy. Well, I hope it cleaned up. But you delivered the product, right?
We got the job done.
It Twin Cities promotional, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, we almost die for you.
Yeah. So yeah. Well,
that made for a really interesting getting back home from Mexico trip.
Yeah. Well, that's you've had a couple. The Sabots have had a couple close calls.
We usually do. Every day is a close call with the Charlie girl, though.
Yeah. you're just always on the razor's edge.
Oh, God. That kid. It's she's like raising 7 kids on her own. I don't know where she gets all of these ideas and energy. And she's just, the problem is she's just cute as a button. So you can't really get mad at her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like an unruly koala bear. I want to get mad at you, but look at that face.
an unruly marsupial. that's her.
Well,
in a nutshell.
I'm glad that everybody has survived the last 70 whatever days, and we're back in here doing it. And golf season is approaching. You're getting ready, right? You're going to be. Do you have a tee time all scheduled for Edinburgh?
Mm-hmm. Next Wednesday, Members Day starts back up next Wednesday, so I'll be out there at 8:15.
There we go.
You know, putting up a really unceremonious 83, probably with, I'd say, 2 or 3 doubles, and yeah, maybe chuck a birdie in there every once in a while.
I may have to join you because my on again, off again love affair with golf and the golf swing. Currently right now is pretty hot and heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were told me to keep this monitored and make sure that, you know, you're eating and sleeping and things like that.
Oh, right. If I, yeah. Because
start to go off the rails like a...
If my hands are bleeding...
Coke addict.
Just, yeah. If my hands are bleeding like from blisters just hitting grinding balls, then, you know, I'm right back in it. Like...
Yeah.
I might need to seek professional help.
Well, what are we... So, since we last recorded, how many hole-in-ones have you had in simulator golf?
Yeah. I've had 3 in a couple, close calls. The first one was a beauty, though. It was a real hole-in-one. It was 179, 7-iron, right at it, two bounces and in.
Boom.
On the... on a fictional golf course in a simulator. It still felt good. It's just not a real hole-in-one, though, but...
It counts enough.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to keep the ball.
The hole-in-ones are great, but it's just a symptom of I'm hitting the ball where I want to, and for the first time, I'm like taking spin off the ball and thinking about things like that, and golf's opening up to me. It's like a new game once you get to a certain level, right? At first, you're out there just trying to hit it straight, trying to keep the ball in bounds, you know, trying to get it close to the hole. I mean, we're always trying to get it close to the hole, but you're not thinking about the higher level stuff, and for me, it's more fun that way, like... The TrackMan data, there's something about when you're on the range, they have that video of the club going through the zone,
mm-hmm.
and then you can feel what your body felt like, and that's what the club looked like when you were doing that. And if you get enough reps in, you just start putting it together. When the club face is open, I see it on video, that's what it feels like. That's where the ball goes. Your mind does a good job of... sort of making the adjustments, I feel. It's just because I've banged balls before, but I've never gotten this this good with the irons. And I think it's the TrackMan and the data and the video helping me. I don't know. I haven't taken a lesson. And I took, you know, when I, the last time I had that addiction, I took, you know, 10 lessons when I was out there all the time, and I just never got it this good. So I'm excited. Still can't hit any long irons or woods too well. So there's something about the length of the club, but I don't know. Those clubs are just inherently harder to hit, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Man, you think a lot more about this than I do. I wish I had the bandwidth to be able to think through these things like you do. I just stand up there.
Time.
Yeah.
I have a little bit more time to think about these things.
Shut my brain down. But yeah, it, you know, hitting long irons is, that's it, hitting a good four iron, for instance, it's one of the most difficult things in golf. Being able to get some good height on it, be able to hit it where you want to, you know, the ability to, you know, sweet spot smaller. You know, if something goes wrong, it can really go wrong. That's, you know.
It, yeah.
It's not a unique problem to you. We'll just put it that way.
I get that. I'm happy with how it's been coming along, and I'm enjoying it. And I certainly will enjoy the major season, putting some wagers down. We almost put a wager down the other day. You want to tell the people about our Wyndham Clark call on a couple different levels?
Yeah. So this is when I was just coming back from Nashville, and it was like the day after I got back from Nashville. And so in Minnesota, you can't use like ESPN Bet or anything like that here. It doesn't. The app doesn't work because the great state of Minnesota won't legalize sports gambling for some unknown reason.
I might have a contact. We could talk about that.
we should have that conversation with said contact when that said contact is on the hot mic. And so he sent me a text about it. He's like, I really like Wyndham Clark at, what was it? Was he plus 55 for the players?
I'll tell you what happened. Add a little context. So because I quit my job and I haven't had a paycheck, since August of 23, I've cut out a few things in my life. And unfortunately, one of those things is gambling. And like you said, it's illegal in Minnesota anyway. So it's been sort of an easy thing to, you know, tighten the budget a little bit, mm-hmm. you know. But mm-hmm. I was listening to No Lay On Up. And they said, yeah, Wyndham, no respect, 55 to 1. I haven't made a single bet in 2024. And I wasn't even betting on football and not playing daily fantasy. I was being really good, but I'm like, that's too juicy. Let me mm-hmm. call my man Kyle, because he's like, I have a guy. So I'm like, can you get us 55 to 1 on Wyndham? You're like, I like that too.
Yeah.
I'm like, let's do $50, you know, 25 each.
Yeah.
So keep going. So yeah. Then you're like, I'll work on it.
Yep. And I was going to take care of it, and I just got distracted with everything else going on right now. And I,
to be fair, I hit you up like 5 hours before the tournament started.
Something like that. Yeah.
It was the Wednesday night before.
Yep. Yep.
And this is the players we're talking about.
Yep. This is the players. And yeah, it was like we had just got in from Nashville the day before, and everything that we've got going on with the new business purchase and stuff like that that we're working on, it fell to the bottom of the ledger, unfortunately.
It was a favor. I wasn't mad. But I did send you a text, because as people that are listening to this podcast, I think it's pretty safe. All right. For those of you who weren't following along, our guy Wyndham Clark at 55 to 1 got out to like a 6-shot lead after Friday. So heading into the weekend, I think he was 6 shots.
I want to say he went, so the first
and
day,
I just text.
So you text me, he's like 11 holes in and he's 4 under. And I think the leader in the clubhouse was at like 6 at that point. He's like, hey, did you get that bet placed? And I was like,
I think I said, did you happen to catch the leaderboard?
Or yeah.
And then you said,
I said, oh fuck.
And then I said,
you're a funny guy.
Oh God.
And I was tilting pretty hard.
Yeah. And so I think he went 66-66 or something like that.
Yeah.
And going into Saturday, he had like a 4 or 5 shot lead. And I think he played decent. I think he shot like 70 or something like that on Saturday. So he walked into Sunday with, I want to say like a 4 or 5 shot lead, and I'm like, oh, son of a bitch.
And then just Scheffler tracked him down, and I saved $25.
Yeah, and then, yeah, end of the story is that, yeah, I saved you, you know, a nice,
thank you,
nice lunch. So,
it speaks to like what's fun about gambling. You just need an emotional stake in the game. So even though I didn't get a bet in, I was following it as if I did, because I wanted the story of like, of course, 55-1. I make one bet all year long. I want it on Wyndham, and then we couldn't get it in, and then I just, you know, tilt off. But
yeah.
But I'm gonna make a few bets. Like we've been a little busier down at Launch Club, I'm happy to say, and I'm taking a job in Med Device. It's like a part time gig, so, you know, I'll make some modest bets coming up, and I'm sure we'll talk about that here on the pod. So.
Have you seen my favorite thing. Like?
No, I haven't even looked at the Masters odds yet. I will.
I'm a sucker for him, but I really want to put money on Rory.
Yeah, that's going to be tough for me, considering I just told you I listened again the No Laying Up podcast. And if you guys haven't listened to that podcast and you like golf, I would probably just hit stop on this podcast and run over there real quick and listen to No Laying Up. They're
building subscribers one by one there, Gilly.
They're really good. But yeah, they went over that Masters with a back nine. I mean, how do you not think about that back nine in 2000? Was it 11 or 12? Whenever he was 19 or no, I think he was 21.
Yeah.
And he had a huge lead, 4-shot lead, which on Sunday, yeah, you should.
I don't know. 4-shot lead at the Masters on Sunday is I think that's the best part about that tournament is those last hole, the last, what, 7-8 holes, things can swing so quick.
Yeah.
There's a couple of holes that it's real easy to make a bogey and it's very possible to make eagle.
On the
two par fives on the backside.
15, I think, is a birdie hole. I always think the tee shot on 18 doesn't fit anybody's eye. You know that tee shot on 18, if you hit it right, you'll go into the trees.
So gross.
So, 4-shot lead is no. That's not. You're not cashing your checks when
you
have a 4-shot lead.
Could you imagine? I mean, having a 2-shot lead with that tee shot has to be just why. I mean, you're hitting it down a hallway on a 460-yard par 4.
Yeah, that thing. Yeah, oh, I hate that tee shot. But what was I gonna say? Yeah.
So they don't.
You
like
Rory. Rory's. I think Rory's the. I did hear on somewhere that I think he's the second favorite. So he'll
behind
get.
Scotty.
He'll get like 8-1.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just not a lot of value there. I mean,
there isn't.
They're saying he's like what? That's like a, 12.5% chance to win. That's not.
Yeah, I don't know. It's ESPN every year. Does a really good like. Who can win the Masters article, and it goes through kind of the historical of like, you know, nobody's ever won their first Masters they've ever played, so these guys are out. Jose Maria Olazabal is, you know, not likely going to cash. You know, Freddie even playing this year? I don't know. Last year his last year?
Actually, he might play. I just read something where he had to pull out of the Champions Tour because of the back.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's going to play, but
But there's a bunch of, you know, and basically it goes through a bunch of different scenarios. Like, you know, nobody that's ever been outside of the top 100 in putting for the year has ever won the match. Different statistics like that. And it's really, it's cool. And it starts to kind of break down, like, who actually has a chance to do this and who is just statistically. And it's funny because it bears out over the year. So. If anybody wants to nerd out, sometime probably next Monday or Tuesday, that article will come out on ESPN, and it's definitely worth a read if you like throwing money down.
Yeah, that sounds useful. The first time at the Masters makes total sense to me. It's the major where it's always played at the same place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you think back to 19, in the vein of our Wyndham Clark story, but this time I actually did have money on Finau. Brooks Koepka, Molinari, all rinse their ball on, what is that, 13, that par 3 where the wind is weird? And they say that the wind up high is way different than the wind you feel at the tee box.
Yeah.
And Tiger hit it to the center and won the Masters.
Yep.
Do you think I had money on Tiger? No.
Nope.
I was all around him. It's like the bingo square.
Missed that one on the coverall.
Yeah, I'm a big bingo guy since our first episode. What's the thing called? The blotter or whatever?
Oh, the dauber.
The dauber.
Well, that's actually it's an interesting golf shot, and it's a great lesson for just golfers in general out there to look at and say, that's a shot that it looks so inviting, and it looks like a shot that you really could and should get aggressive with, because it's a, you know, I mean, that's a 150, 155-yard shot for those guys, which is, I mean, basically a stock 9-iron mm-hmm. most of the time. You would think at that level that shouldn't be an issue, but it's the beauty of that hole that that's such a hard shot. And that was, I think it was something that Woods learned from Nicklaus about that hole. He's like, when it's on that right-hand side like that, never, ever, ever go after that pin if you are in decent position. Middle of the green is always a good spot on that hole because it's not a big green. Go there, hit it to 20 feet, you know, maybe get lucky, you know, one out of 15 times and drop it, or get it inside tap and circle, take your three, and then go make birdie on one of the par fives.
Yeah. It reminds me of poker. When I get down at the end of a tournament, I do things I was pressing. I feel like I had to be better.
Yeah.
And Tiger knew that wasn't the hole to chase the pin. And I feel like because the leaderboard was bunched, they all felt like they had to do something at that point, you know,
right.
Make a birdie.
Right.
So they rinsed their balls, and Tiger just,
I'm
experienced now.
I'll just put my three down and go to the 14th and Yeah.
Even though I'm not the biggest Tiger fan, I'm glad they rinsed their balls, because that's a moment in golf. We need more stuff like that. The state of golf, I've been reading about this, like viewership's like completely tanked.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, two things about that. One, why not a big Tiger fan?
He doesn't tip.
Do you have a serving issue with him? Or
yeah, I was a server one time. I provided real nice service.
Brought him a plate of ribs and... It's like, nah, fuck this guy. Yeah. What do you mean he doesn't tip?
Yeah, I read his book. There's a couple other things I don't want to get into that leaves much to be desired about Tiger. I don't know if it's just me, but when somebody becomes like the person that everybody loves, I don't know. I lose interest.
Oh, see, I think he is. I think he is, and anybody that is a professional golfer that has gotten paid to play golf owes that guy a massive debt of gratitude. They should be tipping for him.
You're saying Launch Club wouldn't be a thing without Tiger, and I agree with you.
Probably not, no. Yeah. Tiger is the... I would argue he is the single most influential athlete we've ever seen as it relates to their sport.
Yeah, no argument. I can't think of a different one.
Yeah. I mean, you could maybe try and throw Jackie Robinson out there, But yeah, he changed the game. And then the amount of interest that got generated, which then translates into viewership, even though you said it's kind of declining right now, but like, you know, the which directly contributes to sponsorship dollars, which jacked up purses. And, you know, quite honestly, he brought a completely different demographic to the game that was not there before.
Yeah.
So I mean, we can always find foibles with the idols in our world, but man, he is someone to be, you know, to be respected and revered in this podcast's
totally.
Humble opinion.
I respect what he does in the golf course.
He may or may not tip. Some people are cheap. That is what it is.
Yeah, it's just
Lefty apparently is that way too, Mickelson.
Look, if they presented good odds with him, but he always has bad odds because they know people are going to bet on him, so I'm never rooting for him in tournaments either. Like, maybe it's a gambling thing, but the no-tipping thing, like, when you make – he's probably got literally $1 billion.
I would
go and throw a 25% tip down. That's all I'm saying.
Fair enough. He actually is great.
I'm not going to add to what people have said. Everybody knows Tiger Woods is
– Yeah.
He's transcended golf, and he made it so that what Scotty is doing, I wish he would have made that putt and won three in a row. Like, it's way harder to dominate now, because when Tiger was dominating, I mean, you're basically looking at a bunch of guys that look like, remember when Kingpin, when Woody Harrelson is like, it's just an honor, or no,
it's an honor to be amongst you great athletes.
Yeah, Ish, Quaid's character says, it's just an honor to be around such fabulous athletes. You got Stadler out there, you got, you know.
Yeah. I love watching old clips of golf pre-Tiger with, like, you know, the gigantic khakis and the and the terrible cotton polos that those guys were wearing.
The NLU guys were going over the 1977 Masters. They're like, they do like a rewatch, and they were going over that, and they were saying firemen and plumbers basically. You know, like, and also the Masters, because you know the Masters is crazy. It's just they do what they want, right? You know, they're it's their tournament. So I don't know if you knew this, but on Sunday they just made the pairings. It wasn't according to score. So you put Ben Crenshaw out there with Jack, and even Jack said, like, yeah, he was supposed to play with Tom Watson, who eventually won.
Yeah.
I think Jack, as humbly as he could, I didn't hear the direct quote, but I think he was saying something to the effect of, like, playing with me can't be the easiest thing in the world. You know what I mean? I think he had 14 majors at that point. He went on to win four more.
I believe you.
So, yeah. So
I'm not good at math.
Yeah. But my point is that, like, look who Jack was playing against, and now look what the field looks like out there. It looks like a bunch of CrossFit athletes. Well, that's a little heavy-handed, but less so the Craig Stadlers,
right,
and more so the, you know, JTs of the world and people doing at least some heavy calisthenics.
Oh, yeah.
Rory's pretty in good shape.
Rory's in great shape. Ricky's in
Wyndham,
great shape.
The aforementioned Wyndham.
Yeah. Like, these guys are all, you know, they're all in great shape. They're all doing, you know, they're all doing just a ton of strength training and things like that. And that kind of goes back to what we were talking about with the Masters odds and why I really like Rory. Like, his ability to drive the golf ball is different than everybody else's out there. Scotty's got he can keep up with them, obviously. But Rory is on a different level. If he's got his driver going, he's 20, 25 yards longer than everybody out there, and he can hit dimes from the tee box.
Yeah.
You know, and if he's got that going, that is the that is a golf course that you have a massive advantage if you are great off the tee, if you are a bomber off the tee. That's why I liked DeChambeau, like, when he got when he went from a size medium polo to an extra large.
Did he say he was going to turn it into a par 70, or was that a U.S. Open? I think he was, yeah.
Yeah.
Or wait, it already is. What is the Masters par 70?
72. Yeah, Augusta's a 72.
Okay.
But it's, yeah, and he...
He may have wanted to play a couple of them before he made that statement.
Right, right. But I don't know. He's a character, obviously. Yeah. But I think that's a... He's another guy that if he gets it to get his whole thing with the U.S. Open that one year was he's like, rough be damned. I'm going to try and hit the ball 400 yards off the I'm taking the Happy Gilmore approach, because even if it gets in that thick shit, if it gets in that cabbage, if I got a wedge in my hand, I've got a chance to put it on the green or around the green.
Yeah, it's hard. I think the data says it's easier to hit it from a bad lie at 90 than it is from a perfect lie at 150, and that kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah. I don't know exactly what that data but
that's
tracks.
That's why everybody's like, you got Matty Fitzpatrick doing whatever he's doing he's increased his distance. It's possible. Yeah. It's kind of interesting that it is possible, because Matty was on the low side of average, and now he's kind of on the high side of average, but. Not a big guy. His body hasn't changed appreciably. Just learning the mechanics of the swing. And I find that very interesting that anybody can come down to Launch Club, launchclubgolf.com, and really crunch the data. And
look at you. Nice shameless plug, kid. Speaking of Fitzpatrick, this was something that we had chatted a little bit about. So what were your the full swing season two?
Yeah, I got a guest book on Tuesday. Our guy Ben Harper wants to go over it.
Okay,
if you want to break it down, I had a whole format. I was thinking about just picking like the top eight most interesting characters.
Okay,
and then I would orchestrate, and you guys just react to, because I had some takes.
Nice.
And I'll save them for that pod. But like,
okay, perfect.
I have
something.
I have a good Rory take. I think it's an interesting show. How do you compare it? Let's wait. I was just going to say, how do you compare it to, like, those first few seasons of Hard Knocks were so fun. When they really let the mics just catch things.
Yeah.
Now it's a little produced. And it was an Aaron Rodgers infomercial this last season. What do you think about Full Swing? Do you think it's kind of an infomercial?
So
we should probably.
The Aaron Rodgers thing.
Yeah.
As an ardent Vikings fan, I pre-programmed to hate him.
Mm-hmm. He's making it easy on you lately.
No, honestly, Oh, you watching like Hard Stitch. Knocks, oh. it changed my opinion of him.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. He's a guy, I appreciate genuine people. Whether I agree with their stances on things or not is pretty irrelevant. If you just kind of are who you are and you're cool about being who you are, like, great. You know, if you want to go do ayahuasca in a hut for a weekend because you think that's good for you and you know, like, he doesn't hide it. He doesn't – there's so many quarterbacks that are just – that you could I could tell you what they're going to say after a game before they say it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not 100% sure what's going to come out of his mouth. And that's entertaining to me.
Yeah, he's entertaining for sure.
Yeah. Oh, we all played a great game. You know, the defense really, you know, gave it their all, and you know, all credit to the guy above.
I just give him credit for. Remember that game? I think it was against the Vikings. He like sprained his knee, and he clearly went in at halftime and took opiates. And you can look this up. It's like, and he came back. I thought he was done for the season. He came back after halftime,
yeah.
Played amazingly, led a comeback. And that post-game interview,
yeah,
he's having a nice time there.
I don't recall such a you know, I could have just blocked it out from a PTSD.
It was a while
standpoint.
Ago. I'll send it to you if you're curious. It's definitely, he's definitely high. I mean, I noticed that at the time, and then I was talking to my buddy David, and we were talking about like recently, and I looked it up, and just how I remember. I, you know, because sometimes things get filtered through like 6 years, and it's
sure,
but it was exactly how I remembered it.
Oh, funny.
All right. Well, yeah. It's an exciting time for golf in Minnesota here.
Oh, so
you guys are getting your 4 months of golf starting now. It's a little more than 4 months. You guys we golfed outside till November.
Yeah.
Depends on what the summer looks like. Is there scenarios in the summer where there's torrential downpours and courses have to shut down because of casual water?
Yep, that'll happen a couple of times, or you know, turn into a cart path only.
I think
situation.
I just asked if it rained in Minnesota during the summer.
You did, and I was trying to let that go and see if we can just walk through it.
It sounds stupid, guys, but guess what? In California, don't really rain in the summer.
Really?
Not really.
Okay.
No. You don't really get a lot of rainouts in the summer at all. I would be surprised if there's even one.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, the summer does not rain too much. I mean, you know, there's...
So, you know. SoCal you're talking about.
Yeah,
I mean,
Southern California.
California, in case you're wondering... Pretty big state.
Yeah.
A lot of different geographical regions to, you know,
yeah,
concern yourself with.
It's got a lot of longitude. Is that the right one, or is it latitude?
I don't know.
You think you know? Anyway, yeah, it's a tall state.
Tall state.
Compared to the Arizona and that.
And welcome to the part of the podcast where we go off the rails for a little bit.
We'll 37 minutes in. Yeah, that's we want to bring it back. What
that's
do we got?
Good.
We got some things planned. Okay, so the point is we've reconvened.
Yeah.
We did get some listeners that first podcast, and I want to apologize. Just things happen, and I'm sure they're over it.
Yeah.
They're like, you son of a bitch.
I'm sure they don't wake up every morning just clamoring for...
Did you check iTunes yet?
Yeah. It's a new episode. Refresh. God. No.
That would be cool if there was someone out there that was.
I can't imagine what that poor bastard's life looks like if that's really what's going on.
You know, there are other podcasts.
Yeah.
Like, he just got it from the link that I posted on Minnesota Golf. He's like, what is this formatting?
What these?
Yeah, so we got something going on with a new scheduling. We have some segments, too.
Yeah, we're going to try and go through a couple of different things. Like, we're, we got to bring out the What Jason Learned About Minnesota segment.
Yeah, we're going to.
Until that dies, we're going to run that into the ground.
I learned something new.
And let's get right into it. Yeah,
I was talking to my friend Ryan Eckert, Ecky, we call him, and we were talking about the cultural differences between Southern California and here in Minnesota. And I said one stark difference is how nice they are about a blow-off. So I'm calling it a Minnesota yes. So here's the scenario I painted for him. I go, Ecky, if I invited you, he lives like 30 miles away from me. If I invited you to a party at my house on a Friday night, you would probably say, oh, yeah, that sounds fun. Let me check and I'll get back to you. And I would know there's a pretty high likelihood that I wouldn't hear from you. And that's fine because I can do the math. Like, you have to get a babysitter. You have to drive the 20 miles. Who's going to drink? Who's, you know, are you Ubering? And maybe you just don't even want to go to a party after a long week of work and taking care of the kids
right,
and all that.
Right.
And that's fine. Same scenario. I feel like this has happened to me a few times where I've invited people to things or wanted to work on business things with somebody. That's what this looks like. Same scenario. I invite them to the party. They're like, oh, yeah, let me get the sitter. We'll call them. What day is that? What should we bring? And then you just never hear from them again. It's like an extra nice blow off. I'm just making a suggestion here, Minnesota. Like, either just tell me no because I'm a big boy and I would appreciate your honesty, or do the, you know, the we'll look into it. But when you start talking babysitter and what can I bring, then I pencil you in and then I get a little disappointed. I don't know. That's just my take. You have
that
thoughts?
That is a very Midwest / Minnesotan thing. We don't like saying no directly to things. That's as you might have experienced.
It sounds a lot like yes.
It does.
Yeah.
It does sound a lot like a yes, because a yes is a very polite way to respond to something.
So I had a party in my house, and it was just me and Huck.
Oh, that's nice. Nobody brought dip.
No. Probably explains why I bought twice as much catering for the grand opening. I had a lot of verbal yeses. They weren't as extreme as, like, what else can I bring? Should I bring my clubs?
Yeah.
Or what are we getting into? Should I bring a...
Is this pet friendly?
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I did notice that, but I think it's just in the spirit of you guys being nice. I just think you overdo it a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. We definitely overdo it a lot of bit.
And then because we want this to be a podcast where people could actually get things out of it for the great state of Minnesota, we were thinking about doing like an in, like I talk to a lot of people in the golf community now that I'm here every day, and
you're finding your way
talking to the community. So we don't have one today, unfortunately, but we were thinking about, like, you know, secret spot, a hot deal, something like that, something that someone could listen to and be like, yeah, that's actually something cool that I would go check out. So I don't know if we'll actually bring any insider information, but we're gonna try.
Yeah, we'll give it a rip, and if anybody in here is from the golf community, you work in a pro shop, you run a business, something like that, and you want us to give a shout out and something we can provide to the listeners to give you a little shine, reach out. We'd love to support our local Minnesota businesses.
Absolutely, yeah. What else? What else are we going to do on this podcast in the future?
Well, we're going to look at some news stories or some strange golf happenings.
Yeah. So, full disclosure, we haven't put in like, there's no think tank that goes on behind the scenes here at Night Putting. But we have been trying a little bit to come up with these.
We don't have a crack research team, you're saying?
Yeah. Nor are we clearly not professionals at this. So, but I do make good drops.
I can feel it all the way down in my plums.
So that I got
makes
down.
Good and relatively irrelevant.
And I'm
drops.
Proud to say I'm looking at the clock. Time is expiring. I'm pretty sure the recording's working, and I didn't have to call Tyler from Zoom.
That's
this time.
Good. Shout out Tyler from Zoom.
<guy's>...
he's like the third member of our podcast.
Yeah. So for that second episode, that'll probably never come out. I had to call Tyler. I called the support for the Zoom. It's the recorder that we have, and I got the same guy, and I'm like, is it just you in a room? So I'm on a first name basis with the head of support over at Zoom. But yeah, where are we going with this? The strange occurrences. So we're going to work on the pod and make it a little bit more professional and put out a little bit more regularly. And we're going to try to do these segments. And I have one for you today. This thing I read about was wild.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. So a young man was at Minnesota Golf Club, right?
Minneapolis
Golf Club, not far from Launch Club, launchclubgolf.com. And he had a hole in one. And this kid, I like his style. He's not either. What was his mentality there when he didn't put the ball away and like put it in some kind of glass case? He's just like, I'm gonna have more of these, so who cares? Or
you're a kid. You're just not thinking about it. You're just walking to the next tee box and hitting the ball. So he's a junior in high school or something like that.
Yeah, I think he was somewhere around the 14, 15. He hits a hole in one.
That was when I had my first one too. I was 16 years old or something like that, and I remember hitting the next shot, and I was just in complete shock in my mind. Like, just it was impossible to concentrate. So I'm sure he probably picked up the ball and then he just went to the next tee box and said, all right, well, we're golfing.
Yeah, when I hit my first on the sim, I just put it right back in the bucket with all the other balls too. So we're all in the same boat. I don't know if I'd keep a ball if I hit it. I don't know. Anyway, he chose not to set the ball aside, and then he blew one off into the trees later on in the round. And another gentleman on the back nine found that same ball and hit another hole in one with the same ball, the lost ball from the kid. And somehow they put it all together in the stories out there.
Yeah.
The odds of that are uncalculable, right?
I mean, it, I would imagine, what is it? It's 12,000 to 1.
12,000 to 1.
To make a hole in one.
For
so
your, yeah, just if you
what is it? 12,000 to 1 time, or 12,000 times 12,000? And then add in the...
Well, that would be two consecutive shots. It'd be 12,000. It'd be 12,000 times 12,000 with a one on top.
Who's good at math? And we've established that this is not me.
Yeah. It's like 1.44 million to one.
Yeah.
That's if... Then you have to factor in... He has to lose the ball. So what's the chances you lose the ball? Maybe
what's
like,
the chances you lose a golf... As a high school golfer...
Probably
playing... Well, so he's a high school golfer. So he's at least... decent, you would imagine. And if they're playing in a practice round, it's probably a practice round that means something to, you know, their positioning on the team or something like that. So chances of losing a ball there are, you know, rather slim. I mean, when I was playing high school and college golf, like, I can't tell you how many times I've lost a ball. So you got to add that variable into it. You have to add the variable that the guy, that the kid that lost the hole-in-one ball and the guy that made a hole-in-one later was the one that found that ball.
And my math was off. I was off by a couple of decimal points. It's 144 million to one to make a back-to-back hole-in-ones.
Yeah.
But that's assuming one in 12,000 is just picking a golfer out of a hat. Let's say these guys were good. So maybe it's one in, 8,000?
Well, I think... I looked this
Anyways,
up.
You know, it's an amazing story.
Yeah, it's a hell of a story, And I can also relate to this kid that, you know, hit the ball after he had a hole in one. I was playing in the mid am, the state mid am. God, I wonder, it was like 2016, something like that. And I was playing at Baker, and I had a number 12 at Baker, knocked a little 9-iron down there, and it just kind of kept tracking, and then disappeared. Pretty sweet.
Yeah.
You know, and we were all excited and everything like that. And I get up on the par five the next hole, and I step up and I whack my drive and I kind of cut it towards the water. And while the ball's in the air, I'm like, oh shit, that's the ball I just had an ace with. Now, luckily, I found it, but it wasn't much more than about 3 yards in play.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And hey, more fun part about that story. One of the guys I was playing with knocked in a 100-yard field shot on that. On the next hole, on the par five, for an eagle. So in our group, we went eagle.
Wow.
Yeah.
In a tourney.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Was cruising along.
Don't you
along.
Have like a tin cup story where you like made a 12 or something on a hole?
God, it was that tournament.
And speaking of tin cup, I listened to that pod where they were doing research, and I have something that's going to blow your mind.
Okay.
Don Johnson's character.
Yeah.
2 weeks before, was slated to be Alec Baldwin.
Really?
Does it work? He dropped out for whatever reason, and they found Don Johnson last minute. He did a bang-up job. I think Alec Baldwin would have been good at that role, too.
Boy. I mean, Don Johnson was the perfect, like, country club golf asshole in that movie. Would Alec Baldwin have done it better? I don't think so. I mean, he's Alec Baldwin. I mean, he's, you know, he's acting royalty, and I'm sure he would have done a bang up job. But Don Johnson's character in that is just so, it's like, you know,
it's hard to answer these questions. You can't really answer.
Yeah, I mean,
those.
could we have put Tom Cruise in for Val Kilmer, and would he have done a better job
in Tombstone?
Yeah.
No. That one's easy.
I'm just saying, like, but it's Tom
That's
Cruise.
That's insulting.
Like,
you know how I feel about Val Kilmer's performance.
We talked about...
You could put Laurence Olivier in that role, and I'm still going, Doc. I'm
reference.
Still going...
Well, we were... No, I talked about this last night. I was at Edinburgh at the bar, and we were kibitzing about things, and actually one of the gals I was talking to, she's never seen the movie Tombstone, and I'm like, I don't know what to say to you right now. She's like, I don't like Westerns. I'm like,
it's but so this much tombstone. More. It's so much more than that.
So she promised me she's going to give me the first 30 minutes, and then we'll see.
Okay.
So I'll follow up on that. But yeah,
and if she doesn't go to 31 minutes, you can just stop talking to her.
Right. Yeah. You know, probably
just block her.
Yeah. You're out.
Yeah.
No, it was. That is Val Kilmer in that role. Is my favorite role of any movie of all time.
Yeah. It's that or Bill the Butcher, Daniel Day-Lewis from Gangs of New York.
That's pretty good. I rewatched that recently.
Did
too.
You?
Yeah. Yeah. Probably
it's
with
not a wife. Short film.
No, it's not.
I remember, kids, there used to be these things called DVDs.
Yeah.
And that one came in a, you needed two discs. It's like, it had its own intermission. You had put in the second disc. I don't know what Cameron Diaz, we're getting off on tangents, but that Cameron is... Diaz should not have been in that movie. I'm a fan of Cameron Diaz, just weird casting.
Yeah, kind of distracting. Kind of like what we've just done here.
Yeah.
But, going back to it, like, yeah, you know.
Strange occurrences.
Yeah, like, could somebody else have done that role? Probably. I don't know if maybe it was just that all of the characters in that movie were so good. You know, Cheech was awesome. He was perfect. Costner was perfect. Rene Russo was perfect.
Yeah, they were also saying that Kevin Costner, that was the first time that he had taken golf seriously.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He gets his swing down to acceptable levels, right?
He's an athletic dude. That's one of the things about golf. If you're good, if you're athletic, if you can do, you know, several other sports, you can usually translate. It's when I used to coach golf, like I'd try and figure out which one of the other sports the girls played, and then I'd try and relate it to that. You know, basketball, if you're in the defensive position, like, we can get you into a good spot with a golf club in your hand. It's the same exact thing, and then we just got to work on, you know, good athletes usually understand big muscle movements.
Yeah.
You know, and that's all the golf swing is, you know, everybody tries to swing with their wrists or swing with their arms and things like that, but it's really big muscle movements. It's shoulders, hips is all that it is.
Yeah. So. Yeah, he pulled it off.
Yeah, absolutely. How did we get down that road?
Because you were talking about, I said you had a tin cup like moment in the USAM or somewhere. So let's get back to that. And I knew I was going to get you off on like a 10-minute tangent because I know that's
really,
one of your
really
favorite
movies.
Really,
really hard to do. Yeah.
And it's one of your favorite movies, Tin Cup. And
Oh, God, that whole, so it was like the 17th hole out at Baker. I was cruising along pretty good and. This was a year that, like, this is probably one of my better years of golf. It was what I made the cut at the state am, which was super exciting. That was actually my second hole in one of the year. I had one on Good Friday that year at Edinburgh. Like, things were going great. I think I was like 2 under or something like that going into 17, and I hit drivable par 4. I ended up hitting 4 or 5 balls off the tee. It was brutal.
That's what's brutal about golf. You can play so well.
Yeah.
One hole. If tournament golf, one hole.
There's not a limit for how many shots you can take on a hole. And it just. Yeah. So, like, the easiest hole on the golf course, I took like a 9 or a 10 on. It just blew everything up. And. Yeah.
When you went home that night?
Oh, yeah.
Don't even look.
Don't talk to me. Don't even look at me. Yeah.
Were you really that mad? Because you're pretty easygoing. I don't know. I can't really get a read on your demeanor. Do you care about things?
I do from time to time.
Because you have duck feathers, you know? Things roll off your back. Why? Like, a minor thing will happen to me, and I'm, like, seeking out therapy.
I have moments in life where I get a little bit worked up. But, you know, by and large, Well, I used to be a lot more of an asshole, quite honestly. We talked about this, actually, funny, we talked about it yesterday at the bar. We were talking about my senior year of high school, that I had one hole, number 8 east at bunker, that I blew up on, otherwise I was going to be in contention. And that hole, like, it cost me a scholarship. Like, I freaked out. I was yelling, screaming, breaking clubs, acting like a complete asshole, and...
So you know what I look like when I don't play golf.
Yeah.
Because I'm not, you've hung out with me enough to know I'm nothing like that. Like,
just walking around. Maybe I'm a little high strung. Okay. I'm not the aforementioned Mr. Rogers, let's say.
The founder of the town of Rogers, Minnesota.
Yeah, a lot of you guys didn't know that, did you?
Yeah. I didn't know that growing research. Up there.
Yeah. But yeah, it's not fun to be like that. It's a frustrating game, but it's it really can help you work on your patience.
100%.
And I think that's a good thing in life.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think it's one of those things you just learn as you get older. You get some perspective. You realize that, you know, hitting a subpar 7-iron on a par 3 is not the end of the world. It's you just go and try and make the. I mean, golf's such a great metaphor for life. You know, sometimes you hit a perfect shot, and it goes right where you want it to, and you know, you get a 3-footer for birdie, and you knock it in, and you move on. You're excited about it. Everything went the way you planned it. Sometimes you hit a great shot, and something weird happens, and all of a sudden, you know, you're fucked, and you're staring a double bogey in the face because you can't, you know, somebody decided to put a cart path in a weird spot, and. And all of a sudden you can't find your ball, you make double after you, and then sometimes you do absolutely asinine things like skull a 7-iron on a par 3 and all of a sudden it runs, you know, up the fairway and somehow catches the right bank, and you know, it's a great metaphor for life. It's so much more about how you react to something than what actually happens.
One of my hole in ones is a bad shot. Win the holes. That happens. And that happens in life. You know what I mean? You do the wrong thing and you get rewarded.
Yeah.
I think the real take home like lesson is just control what you can control. Like the last shot's gone. I have it in the bathroom here at Launch Club, Ben Hogan's quote of the most important shot is the next one.
Right.
You can transfer that to life pretty easily.
Yeah. That's what I try and talk to, you know, my 9-year-old plays a lot of different sports and, you know, and she has a tendency to be a little
Penelope the jock.
Yeah. She has a tendency to be a little bit too, results oriented on things. And I said, you know, you can control your attitude and your effort. The rest of it is kind of, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot.
Yeah. Your preparation that goes into your effort.
Yeah.
And your attitude.
Yeah.
And then you just roll out the ball or whatever sport it is and see how they fall.
Yeah. And sometimes Wyndham Clark is, you know, going off at 55-1 and then he's six shots clear of the field after 3 days. And then, you know, you think that that's a shoe-in of a –
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he lips out on the 18th at TPC Sawgrass and wasn't such a shoe-in anymore.
Yep.
That was a – we didn't even talk about that. Did you saw the lip out that he had, right?
Yes.
Oh, that was brutal.
It went 60% in the hole?
Yeah, I was going to say about 3/4 of the ball was in the hole, and it just violently
This is how petty
out.
I am. I was happy because that made it so I wasn't going to be sad about not winning $1,300 when I actually could use $1,300. And having the brag of like, yeah, I made one bet all year. Wyndham, 55. I know my value.
Yeah,
come on,
exactly.
Guys. I'm a.
Meanwhile, Wyndham lost what? I don't know, $500,000 by that putt not going in, or I should say the chance at it because they would have went to a playoff.
My $1,300 would have mattered more.
More to you
to
than his half a mil would have meant to him.
We're at an hour. Anything else we need to tell anybody? I think we're gonna. Today is what? April 5th of 2024. We should state the year because it's a chance.
So in 70 days from now, we're gonna provide you one more really kick-ass podcast where Gilly and I just kind of go off on weird tangents.
We're gonna do 69 days of prep.
It's gonna be
the best Minnesota golf centric podcast of all time.
So we'll see you around July 4th.
Yeah, we'll see you guys. No, seriously, keep checking in with this. We're gonna do better. I love you, Minnesota.
Hey everybody, we're all gonna get laid.
Sun beat down, I had the rain.